Now, suddenly we have this gigantic virus that changes everything we know, and there's no N95s. In the hospital, in the state, and your boss are telling you, get more N95s. What do you do? We don't know. It's a really impossible, tough decision. Like, this is your life on the line.
Hello, and welcome back to my new podcast, Hidden Narratives, brought to you by Watcher Entertainment. I'm your host, Stephen Lim, and on this show, we share really important but untold stories from the Asian American community. Today, we're talking about something that's been in the center of attention of the COVID-19 pandemic, and yet is not very well understood, and that is PPE, or personal protective equipment. For healthcare workers, PPE mitigates the spread of diseases, and so not having it is truly the difference between life or death. But as many of you may know, many healthcare workers have come out publicly expressing their concerns over PPE shortages. The shortage has gotten so bad that some suppliers are price gouging, and to make matters worse, hospitals and even states are bidding the price of PPE up against each other. Another alarming issue in the middle of all of this is that the CDC has flipped on their stance around the public wearing masks. Initially, they said that only the sick should be wearing masks, but now recommend cloth face coverings for everybody. All of this has led me to ask so many questions that I have had a hard time getting the answer to. For example, why is there such a shortage of PPE in our country? Why is it so hard to get people PPE? Why did the CDC flip their stance on wearing masks in public? And what can I do to help out? To help me get to the bottom of the PPE conversation is my special guest today, Dr. Shuhan He. Dr. He is an emergency medical doctor at Massachusetts General Hospital and the founder of a nonprofit called Get Us PPE. He gave me a detailed explanation of why it's so hard for healthcare workers to get PPE and what we can do to help. All that being said, please subscribe to this podcast and write us a review because that's how people find out about us and we want to keep the show going. So without further ado, I present to you my conversation with Dr. Shuhan He. All right. Hi, Dr. He. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a crazy time, just like for everybody. But certainly, I think we're all trying to do the best we can given the situation and pandemic. So.
Definitely. First off, I do want to say thank you so much for serving this nation on the front lines, you know, both in the hospitals as well as in the fight to get PPE for doctors. And just for people who don't know who you are, do you mind giving some context about your background?
Sure. So my day job is I work at the Mass General Hospital in Boston. I work in the emergency room as a doctor there. I also work at Mass General Center for Innovation in Digital Healthcare. So what we do is make digital tools to solve problems. So given the PPE shortage, myself and a few other physicians, we launched getuspppe.org, which has kind of become the national clearinghouse for demand and supply for PPE to get frontline healthcare providers PPE they need. It also goes to a lot of non-healthcare providers as well, which is really important actually for minimizing spread of COVID. And we can talk about that.
For sure. I do want to, I know we're all suddenly experts on COVID and experts on PPE, but I think it's important to hear it from a doctor. And so if you could just give us a brief rundown on what PPE is, like what does it stand for? What classifies as PPE? And anything else that you think we should know about PPE?
Yeah. So PPE is personal protective equipment. It is anything that helps people stay essentially protected from the disease of COVID, right? PPE is used in a lot of other diseases like MRSA, you know, those flesh-eating bacteria we always think about, influenza, measles, mumps, all of the diseases that regularly come in the hospital, we use PPE for. It's particularly salient in this situation with COVID because it is such a communicable disease. The disease spreads so fast. And obviously, it's very deadly. And so critical access to PPE means that healthcare providers are protected when they're taking care of all of those patients that have COVID. Because if we start getting sick as well, that means there's no one left to take care of patients. And now you start to see kind of the issues that our healthcare system would fall apart.
And now if you could just walk through, what are the different types of PPE that you guys need?
Yeah, so this really comes down to everything that essentially composes of a full body suit, right? We've seen those full body suits in like Ebola crisis. But that also is a very unique sort of PPE in the sense of you can't really get out of it, which makes it really difficult to go between patients because then you end up transmitting between patients, right? So we end up having PPE that we can take off and take on really easily, but it still needs to cover you from head to toe, right? So things like 1, hair covers, 2, goggles, Three, a face shield, right? Because if it gets on your face and then you touch it, suddenly you're gonna get COVID as well. Fourth, masks. So this is probably the most important because it is transmissible through the air. How much are we sealing essentially off our mouths? And then gloves as well, gown. So everything essentially from the neck down. The last thing that's important to remember is also shoe covers, right? Because if it's on the shoes, we start spraying it around between different rooms in different parts of the hospital, and then suddenly we end up with COVID.
And what are the specific items that are in shortage right now? There's a lot of conversation around people saying they can't get PPE at their hospital. And if they do, it's like, I do have a friend who works at a hospital, and he told me that he only gets one mask per week that he has to reuse. And so I wanted to kind of hear from your perspective, what are the items that are in great demand right now?
Yeah, so two separate very important points here. The first is, what's the shortage? So shortage is everything, to be clear. So there's not any piece of PPE that is very abundant, but because we are talking about lots of different types of PPE, there are some that are in more shortage than others, right? So I'll give a perfect example of this. When we talk about covering our mouths, there's two standards of masks that cover our mouths when we breathe in, right? The KN95 and the N95. Sounds exactly the same, but there's a really important difference, okay? In Wuhan, when they had the initial spread of coronavirus, the Chinese standard for this mask that basically filtered out particles, something called KN95. They use it and they think it's sufficient essentially for filtering out the virus. Not because of any like technical issue, but because of just historical issues. In America, we use something called N95, different standard. Just like if you're plugging in electricity into a wall, or if you're gonna call something champagne, right? It has to be for a certain region. There's certain like specifications around that. So N95s are really hard to find because this is our specification in the United States. Whereas KN95s are actually relatively abundant because when China had the coronavirus issue, they made a ton of KN95s, right? So now you have an issue where you essentially have plugs, like a charger, right? That doesn't fit into the wall. And so N95s are incredible shortage here in the United States. And that's generally been the gold standard for what we use to treat COVID patients, especially when doing the really dangerous things like putting them on ventilators. You get a ton of virus in your face. So you have to make sure you're wearing like the best of the best of the best, right? And those N95s are really hard to come by, whereas KN95s are relatively hard to come by, but still in short supply as well.
Right. I don't want to go too deep into that rabbit hole, but I do want to ask, can we use those masks in our hospitals? And obviously that's that's the question. But like, you know, I just want to know, like, why can't we use those masks?
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to put you in somebody's shoes, okay? Because I think all misunderstandings come down to what is a person's incentive in life, okay? So your job is a supply chain manager. This is your job. You're employed. You feed a family. And your family depends on you for this paycheck, okay? You can't do this. Your family goes hungry. And you're unemployed and you lose your mortgage, okay? Now, for 30 years you've worked at this company and you've done nothing but N95s, okay? This is the standard. This is what the FDA tells you. This is what your bosses at the hospital tell you. This is what the Department of Health Services tells you as well. This is what they do a fit test for. Every year, they spray sugar water in your face while wearing this mask at the right size to figure out, yeah, it fits you and you're not gonna get the virus, right? Because if someone gets it, they die and that's on you, right? Now, suddenly we have this gigantic virus that changes everything we know and there's no N95s. In the hospital, in the state, and your bosses are telling you, get more N95s. What do you do? We don't know. It's a really impossible, tough decision. Like, what do you do? Do you just try and find more N95s? Well, it's a new supplier. What if you know, how do you know that it's real? What if it's counterfeit?
Right.
What if it's the right, what if the N95 is exactly the same as it before, but it's a different size and suddenly it doesn't fit. The medium isn't the one that fits them because they slightly size mediums differently, just like a t-shirt. And then suddenly you get virus particles in your face, right? So if I'm the supply chain manager and you ask me, can I get a KN95? It's not just me, you know? It's the hospital, it's the nurses, it's the doctors. It's a super complicated question. Here's my thought. I think eventually we will accept KN95s. The FDA has already said that they're probably equivalent. Now it comes down to a question of, can people accept this, right? If you're a doctor on the front lines and suddenly in a despair situation, you're being told you can use a KN95, it's the same. Can you trust that? This is your life on the line.
Right. Yeah, I guess, and sorry, I didn't mean to go too deep into that, but I think it's really important because I'm at home watching this all unfold. I'm getting frustrated, but it's hard for me to even like see the complexity of that problem. So yeah, thank you for giving color on that.
And so every piece of PPE has different risk profiles and different ways you make it. And they're all independent discussions of how do you get to the point where you are getting healthcare providers PPE they need. right? So depending on what we're talking about, it just depends. Yeah. Like most things in life, right?
For sure. So going back to the N95s and the surgical masks, why is it so hard for America to source those right now?
Yeah, so a pillow manufacturer, I'm sure you've heard these stories, can overnight turn into a surgical mask creator. Because it's basically a piece of cloth that covers your face. Mm-hmm. And you throw it out. So yeah, if I'm a manufacturer that's never done this before, I probably can do that. And I'll turn it around in 3 weeks, maybe pretty fast, right? An N95 is a specification. Like, how do you make champagne or a Lamborghini in a specific way? You have to know the technical details, and you can actually make a pretty good approximation of N95 if you have really smart people in the room that just makes it, right? But then you have to source certain supplies that make up that filter. And all happens to be that every country in the world right now is trying to get those same pieces right now. So you could have 95% of the N95, no pun intended, right? And you're missing that one filter because, you know, Malaysia is the one supplier of that and everyone in the world used to rely on it. But now, you know, there's too much COVID and it's just not there. So what do you do? I mean, like a part of an N95, like 95% of the way there doesn't get you anything. It's not the same standard. So it's not useful. It's basically a surgical mask.
So you're in the middle of all of this. You're both doing the work on the front lines as well as on the back end trying to get this equipment for doctors and also other people who are in at-risk situations. How bad is the shortage right now?
Okay, so I'm going to answer this in two ways, right? The first is what happens at a big hospital like mine, Mass General Hospital, you know, Harvard Medical School, one of the biggest employers in all of Boston. We're relatively okay for now. Now, let's be clear, at how fast we're going through things, it is very concerning, right? Because a lot of sick people, and every single time you see a sick person, you just go through PPE like crazy, right? Because the nurse has to take care of them. I have to take care of them. The respiratory therapist, when you intubate them, has to take care of them. So the speed at which we're going through PPE at a large hospital is super concerning, even if you have warehouses of it, right? The second problem is that if you're a nursing home, when I get a patient from a nursing home, so, you know, basically at these places, you have your grandmother who has severe Alzheimer's, she can no longer take care of herself. Well, she has 24/7 assistants to help her take care of her, right? But there's one caretaker between, let's say, 10 patients. Well, if one of those Alzheimer's patients gets COVID, and there's no PPE, all of them are going to get COVID, right? So those places generally have been mostly forgotten, and something that's really important for us to deliver PPE to. Because if that healthcare provider at the nursing home, they're not intubating them, putting on ventilators, they're not resuscitating them, but they're serving them lunch, and that's how you pick up COVID. And they need to wear PPE too. Those places generally have been left behind. And it's really important for us to get PPE. Because here's why. If we don't, that means they all get sick, which means they go to the hospital, which means we use a ton of PPE for all of those patients. Mm-hmm. But if we get PPE to those places before they get sick, well, now you're using less. So it's actually a way to conserve PPE. But
I see.
It's such a broken system right now that there isn't enough for anybody.
Right, right. And I do want to get to the solution here in just a second. Because that's I think how we can all really support this effort. But I do want to ask one more question about the mask controversy, which is, for a long time, the CDC was telling us, don't buy a mask. And what we found out looks like over time is that they were saying that in order to conserve the shortage for medical healthcare professions. And so I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that, on how that was handled? And what should people know?
Of course. All right, I'm going to make it clear, wear a mask. Wear a mask that is, I want a mask on every man, woman, and child. I want a mask that has different logos, that has the Lakers logo on it, the Clippers logo, and red, purple, green, blue, Gucci, Nike, I don't care. Everyone should wear a mask. There's two parts of this. There's PPE and masks for doctors, and then there's masks for everybody else. But let's be clear, it's not so you can prevent getting COVID. It's so you can prevent coughing off of COVID when you have it. Essentially, how I think about it is all the social distancing we're doing, 6 feet, well, if you wear a mask, it gives you distance in a situation we cannot have distance. Now, I completely admit that the CDC and all these guidelines about not wearing masks early on was super confusing. So I did a Reddit AMA like a month ago. And around these times, that is like eternities, right? It might as well have been centuries ago. Yeah. And what we said was, look, people should wear masks. But the problem is that when that message gets out, they're buying N95s from the hardware stores. Hospitals have the same supply chain as people who go to like Lowe's and they buy an N95.
Mm. You know what's tough? About a month ago, I started to wear a mask. And then I started hearing cases of racist incidents against Asian Americans. And I started getting scared of wearing a mask.
Right.
And so actually, like, I appreciate you saying that because that's really important for people to hear from a doctor that they should wear a mask. And it looks like Asian Americans, we kind of have more data too, because we see people in Korea, we see people in Asia, in China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, they're all wearing masks. So it looks normal to us. I watch K-dramas, people wear masks in those. And so it's normal to me, but I just hope that everybody listening out there would also be able to start to get over the fear of people wearing masks.
Yeah. And this is a huge cultural shift, right? You know, what's really ironic about this whole disease is that it's the ultimate disease of inequity, right? And like, like stereotyping. So I'll give an example of this. Okay, let's say we just treat only people who are incredibly wealthy and have all the things going for them in American society, right? Well, guess what? That homeless shelter that we forgot about is where the coronavirus breeds and comes right back at you, right? Mm-hmm. There is no part of this disease that is something that you could just forget about a part of society for. This is something we're fundamentally going to have to all do together. And the disease links us, and not just me as an Asian American, but you know, African Americans, right? They're, of course, they're terrified of wearing masks. You've heard these stories, right? I walk into a Walmart, I wear a mask and get shot. Terrifying. I'm sure it's terrifying. I have no idea what that must be like. But for our public health, we're going to have to get through this together somehow. If we don't, and then they don't wear a mask, well, we start this all over again.
Right. We all start to suffer again.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to now transition the conversation into how we can help. Because a lot of people are grieving and they feel, and I'll tell you, you know, for myself, I've been feeling a lot of like pent up sadness and I don't know how to channel the energy. And so I wanted to reach out to you because I saw that you started an organization called Get Us PPE, which was designed to solve some of these issues. Can you walk us through what your organization is and how it's solving those issues?
Yeah. So let's talk on the ground how we're solving this problem. Okay. This is a supply and demand issue, period. You get less demand and more supply. Okay. So how do you figure out what people need? Well, you ask them, right? You go to a website and the people ask, say they need PPE. And they say who they are privately, confidentially. And then we get PPE delivered to them, okay? So there's three phases of supply. The first phase is PPE that existed just in a lab or in a factory or a manufacturing facility. You know, people use N95s for wildfire. So those N95s go to healthcare workers, right? That was the first stage. Second stage is making PPE. Can you stand up American-made domestic manufacturing just because the international supply chain is so broken, right? So how do you do that really quickly? Well, America's not really a manufacturing powerhouse anymore, but it turns out that there's this whole new thing called 3D printing and open source communities and distributed manufacturing. Well, how do you make that stand up a significant amount of PPE on the supply side? Well, you get them a standard protocol. So the NIH finally released a standard protocol for a face shield. And can they hit that standard that would be useful for healthcare workers? Right, because we know if you hit that standard and you can do the QA and all these things, it's going to protect us from COVID. Now, last part is the international supply chain, right? So you have to stand up new suppliers. Fundamental problem is that if we collect a bunch of money from people and donors and then just go and buy blindly, right? You know what happens is that we actually just bid against hospitals and we drive up the price of the same PPE. Really problematic. So what we have to do is stand up and find new suppliers to enter the market, get them, you know, through the supply chain, get them validated, get them approved, and then buy them, and then send them places that need them. If we have high-quality N95s that's already been tested and validated, we'll send them to a hospital. If it's a brand new supplier, we'll get it tested, and then we'll send it to a place that has never had PPE before. This is perfectly good PPE, but they don't have to go through the whole rigmarole of a hospital and fit testing all their employees and all, you know, all this controversy. You get to the nursing home. So now it's a triage decision. If this organization is successful, we will not exist in 6 months. That is our whole goal. And then we give all this learning and data to the government. But in the setting of not having that centralized people who are doing it, it's going to be us. We're going to have to solve this problem. So we will.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a lot of ways that people can get involved. But people like me, you know, who are kind of just sitting on the sidelines, like wanting to help out, what can we do? Can we donate to this? Like, how can we help?
Yep, absolutely. So first, you can volunteer your time. We are driven by volunteers who are just working day and night around this. 16-hour days for volunteers. It's insane because it solves the problem, right? I always point to Chicago as kind of this amazing use case of just a med student who decided to pick up and help us and then has gotten, you know, over 100,000 donations around this Chicago by manually texting nurses and figuring out what do they need and then figuring out the supply. And we work with them very closely to do that kind of delivery. Number two, if you're a maker or have some capacity to make American, there's a role for you. Sell it. Please sell it. And don't lose money on it, because that's important for making that whole system work. How do you demand that I want a Lakers face mask? Just ask for it, right? That makes a big difference. The third is you can donate. And what we're doing with that money essentially is doing these very targeted programs where we stand up new suppliers, or we do better data surveillance monitoring of our end users, right? So we can figure out, hey, this guy has zero, this was like zero PPE and needs it now. Whereas those guys, yeah, they say they need PPE really badly, but actually they have 2 weeks left. So let's hold on there.
For sure, for sure. I am curious, when did you start Get Us PPE? Was it pretty recently? I saw that you guys launched like, today March is March 20th. We're recording this on April 11th. So that's less than a month ago.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit of background of like, how it got started? I mean, were you just like, oh my God, we're running out, I gotta get this thing, and then you thought it was a bigger problem than that?
Mm-hmm. So basically, every country, when they go through a coronavirus curve, right, you know the curve of everyone getting coronavirus, and you see all these like projections, they go through something called, what I call a PPE curve, but they suddenly realize, oh God, we don't have any PPE in Iraq, right?
Mm.
And they realize this is a problem. So our country, I think, went through the same thing, and basically independently, like 50 volunteers or 50 different groups around one weekend on March 20th came up with these little lists, right, of like who needs PPE and who has PPE, and said, can we do a coalition? Let's just merge our data together. And so we did that, and we decided to come under the umbrella of Get Us PPE, because at the time, my site was something like 48 hours old. And that was like one of the older and most stood up websites, because I can just launch it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also had all the doctors on the board, and we understood the problem really well. And then we became 501c3, and then we became a unified data platform. And it just kind of organically happened. It was thrilling, but at the same time, it was just all because we felt the same mission, in that we wanted to not be in this life anymore.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say thank you so much, first of all, for doing this. I mean, I know, like you guys are saying, it was just like a response to a need, but it's so important. And also, I think people listening, it shows us that this adversity, even though it's one of the hardest times that we face as a nation, as a world, it's really bringing people together, and we're seeing a lot of good come out of it. So I don't want to take any more of your time, Dr. He, but thank you so much for enlightening us on the PPE situation, and you know, all the best of luck for you.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, well, that does it for my conversation with Dr. He, and I am, as usual, recording this reflection right after we hung up the phone. And I just want to say, my big takeaway is, let's fight this pandemic together. I was really inspired by Dr. He. You know, he's an Asian American doctor born in China who is out there on the front lines fighting COVID, not only in the emergency room, but also on the supply chain with getting PPE to hospital workers. And you know, with the collective efforts of him and many other people part of this organization, there's the people who are in the supply chain side, in the logistics side, in the advertising, in the social media, everybody's coming together. What you've seen is something beautiful come out of it. You know, and that's not unique to Dr. He. I've seen that happen in other situations, right? Like the campaign I wanna shout out is #HateIsAVirus. That was started by a group of people who just felt the need to do something. And it's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect on the first try. But what you see is that when people put their heads together and they start to build, the good things happen. And so I want to encourage you guys, you know, this Hidden Narratives community of people who really care about the issues happening right now with COVID-19. Let's do something. Let's put our money together and let's give back. And you know what? Let's start by making an email account. All right, we're going to make it. It's going to be hiddennarrativespodcast@gmail.com. And we want to just be an amplifier for good. Part of that amplifier effect, by the way, is you can help us out. You can help Hidden Narratives by subscribing to the podcast, 2, writing a review, and 3, rating us that glorious 5 stars on wherever you listen. So that's it for today. I appreciate your time, and I will chat with you very soon. Bye, everyone.